Welcome to the Midland Seventh-day Adventist Church. We hope our broadcast will bless you.
A few weeks ago, I was on Facebook. Now let me stop and say that I don't like Facebook. All I really want from Facebook is to see pictures of friends and family and keep up with what is going on with them, right? However, what I usually see on my feed or my page is advertisements, political posts, lots of articles and videos that are just being reposted and shared by people that I'm friends with. And besides all of the annoying aspects of Facebook, I just don't have time for it. So, as I was saying, I was on Facebook. Most likely it was because I had a notification that Hillary, my wife, had posted pictures of our family. And I was checking them, or probably the only other reason I was on there is because I might have been posting something for sale on Marketplace. During those precious few moments that I was on there, I noticed a post from an Adventist speaker that I follow, Ty Gibson. In his post, he said that he had just watched the scariest movie that he had ever seen. It was called The Social Dilemma. And he said that it was a documentary about how social media is altering human consciousness to our utter demise. Now, as I said, I don't like Facebook. So I was immediately interested. And within a few days, Hillary and I had watched the film. Now, I'm not sure if I would call it scary. However, I would label it something like disturbing and eye-opening. I would also say it is a must-watch for anyone who uses social media or the internet. This is not just some conspiracy theory that is based on unproven facts. No, this film features interviews from legitimate professionals that have worked at many of the popular social media and internet companies, as well as professors from some of the nation's top universities. Now, the film is about 90 minutes long, and it does a good job of revealing to you the goals and driving force behind social media and other internet sites. Now, as it turns out, the main goal of these internet companies and social media websites is to make money. Now, I know what you're thinking, and even though I may not know exactly how you would say it, it probably goes something like this. Duh. But really, think about it for a little bit. How does a company make money on a free service? What are they being paid for? What is the product that they are providing? And who are their customers? Now, I'm going to go ahead and spoil it for you. You are not the customer. The advertising and marketing agencies are the customers. You are the product. Now, because most of you have probably not seen this documentary, and because it goes along with my sermon this morning, I would like to share with you a few quotes from some of the interviews that will help you to get a glimpse into how and why they do this. I also need to mention that the remainder of the time I spend talking about the film will be filled mostly with direct quotes from the interviews in the film. I have mixed in a few comments of my own. However, since there are so many quotes, I will name a few of the people who said them, but I will probably not take all of the time to mention every single person that goes along with every single quote, just because I want to have you follow the point of the film and keep this sermon flowing smoothly today. There is a man named Jaron Lanier. He is an author and also one of the founders of virtual reality technology. He says that the product that these sites provide to advertisers is the gradual, slight, imperceptible change in your own behavior and perception. It's changing what you do, how you think, who you are. It's a gradual change. It's slight. So how do they do this? What is it that they have that they are able to provide to advertisers that will result in a slight change in your behavior and perception? And why would advertisers pay for this service? Dr. Shoshana Zuboff, who is also an author and a professor at Harvard's Business School says that this is what every business has dreamt of, to have a guarantee that if it places an ad, it will be successful. That's their business, speaking of tech companies. They sell certainty. In order to sell certainty, you need great predictions. And in order to have great predictions, you need a lot of data. Tristan Harris, who is a former design ethicist at Google, and he's also one of the main contributors to the documentary, says, "People call this surveillance capitalism. Capitalism profiting off the infinite tracking of everywhere that everyone goes by large technology companies, whose business model is to make sure that advertisers are as successful as possible. Everything you're doing online is being watched, is being tracked, is being measured. Every single action you take is carefully monitored and recorded. Exactly what image you stop to look at, and even how long you look at it. They know when people are lonely. They know when people are depressed. They know when people are looking at photos of their ex-romantic partners. They know what you're doing late at night. They know the entire thing. Whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, what kind of neuroses you have, what your personality type is like." Sandy Perikilis, who is a former operations manager at Facebook, says that all of this data that we're just pouring out all the time is being fed into these huge computer systems that have almost no human supervision. So what do they do with the data? Well, according to the film, they don't sell the data. They use the data to build models that predict our actions. And whoever has the best model wins. All the things you've ever done, all the clicks we've ever made, all the videos we've watched, all the likes, all of this gets brought into building a better model. The model, once you have it, can predict the kinds of things that a person does. So the model, with the help of artificial intelligence, is constantly improving. The more information it collects, the better it gets. A lot of these companies, there are three main goals. The first goal is the engagement goal. It's to drive up usage and keep people scrolling. Number two is the growth goal. It's to keep people coming back and to have them invite friends who invite more friends. And third is the advertising goal, which is to make as much money as possible from advertising while doing the other two things at the same time. Each goal is powered by algorithms, whose job is to figure out what to show you to keep those numbers going up. An algorithm is basically a formula or a computation that is defined by very specific criteria. It includes a step-by-step process for these supercomputers to follow in order for them to accomplish these goals. Now, it isn't just a couple of websites that use this type of business model. It is all the major websites, such as Google, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Pinterest, Snapchat, Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, and you name it. If it's free, if it's popular, it's probably using the same business model. Many of you know that I am a financial analyst, so this type of data collection really strikes a chord with me. I deal with analyzing data and trends on a daily basis. However, the types of and amounts of data that I work with are nowhere near what we're talking about here. But the principle is still the same. One of the major differences between what I do and what these tech companies do is that they take their data collection methods to a whole other level. They aren't just satisfied with data collection and predicting behaviors. No, they're actually wanting to influence and change. Tristan Harris, who I mentioned before, went to Stanford University. At Stanford, they have what's called the Stanford Persuasive Technology Lab. Students who go through this program study how to take everything that we know from psychology and what persuades people and build that into technology. There are many people that work at these tech companies that have gone through this program. So companies come up with ideas of how to keep users engaged or how their users can be influenced, and then they test these theories out in real time. They perform lots of little experiments to see how people will react to subliminal changes in the website. They use this information to create design features such as likes and photo tagging. All of these design elements are used to play at you emotionally and to keep you engaged as long as possible. Studies have even shown that we can affect real-world behavior and emotions without even ever affecting the user's awareness. Another aspect of these algorithms that is that no one sees the exact same information. Even two friends who are close to each other, who have almost the same exact same set of friends, will not see the same things when they're on these websites because these computers calculate something different for each person. Rashida Richardson, who is an adjunct professor at the NYU School of Law, says, "We all have a different set of facts. When that happens at scale, you are not even able to consume information that contradicts with the worldview that you've created. That means we're not being objective, constructive individuals. When you see someone who doesn't believe the same thing you do, you think, how can they be so dumb? Don't they know the truth? Haven't they seen the same videos and articles that I've seen?" And the answer is no. This type of situation leads to polarization, which is the same thing as an increasing division in our society, where you have sharply contrasting groups and sets of opinions and beliefs. Another problem with these algorithms is that they bias toward false information. It's not because the developers want them to, but it's because false information gets more attention and more clicks from users. This in turn makes these companies more money and skews the algorithm so that it promotes falsehood more than the truth. There was a study done at MIT that showed that fake news on Twitter spreads 6 times faster than the truth. That is because the truth is boring. There are trillions of these posts on these sites. Even the tech companies cannot know what is truth and what is false. Now, there is way more information in the film, and I would highly recommend it to anyone who is interested to know more. I will just put out a disclaimer that there are some references to evolution, as well as it contains some mild language that you probably find objectionable, but I'm sure that most of us who are not children can handle the content in the film. The main reason why I wanted to tell you about the film this morning and share with you some of these quotes is because I believe there is an underlying message that seems pretty obvious to me. It goes back to one of the quotes that I mentioned earlier. It is the quote by author Jaron Lanier that caught my attention the most. He says, "It is the gradual, slight, imperceptible change in your own behavior and perception. Changing what you do, how you think, who you are, it's a gradual change. It's slight." When I heard this quote, I immediately thought of the methods that Satan uses to deceive people. You see, these methods did not originate with advertising companies or the social media. These methods originated with Satan. In John 8, verse 44, which is our scripture this morning, it says, "You are of your father the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar and the father of it." Satan is extremely smart, and he knows just how to play at our weaknesses. Just like the algorithms on supercomputers, he knows more about our weaknesses than we even do. He knows that certain temptations work on us more than others do. He knows how to place us in situations where we are more likely to fail. He knows every trick in the book, and he knows exactly how to use them against us. He makes things look attractive. He makes things seem harmless. He plants doubts in our heads, all of it with the goal of getting us to fall into sin. These days, you hear the term fake news a lot. We are especially hearing this term more and more the closer we get to the election. And no matter what political views you have, there seems to be a whole lot of misinformation out there. Some have called this the disinformation age. And you know what? I'm inclined to agree with them. You don't even know what's true anymore or who to believe. Everything on the TV, the internet, the newspapers, the radio, It's all biased. Everyone has their own agenda. No one is bipartisan. Everyone's looking out for themselves, and they want to win. Win with whatever the cost, as long as they gain personal power or wealth. Whether it's who to vote for, how to handle the coronavirus, or how to deal with all the civil unrest that is in our nation, it is hard to know the truth. And you know what? Satan is absolutely loving it right now. His whole goal is passing off a lie that is mixed with truth. Just like a counterfeiter knows you can't pass off Monopoly money at the bank, he knows that his deceptions must be as close to the truth as possible in order for people to believe them. And if all of this weren't enough, he goes one step further. You see, he's not just satisfied that he's able to get you to sin. No, that's not good enough for him. What he really wants is for you to be separated from God, because he knows that God will forgive any sinner who is truly repentant. So he tries to preempt that by kicking you while you're down. As soon as you sin, he makes you feel worse by telling you that God can't forgive you because you're too bad of a sinner. You know, tomorrow is the first day of November, as well as the end of daylight savings time, like Gary mentioned, so don't forget to turn your clocks back tonight. And now that we are finally moving past Halloween, almost, we will be ushering in the unofficial Christmas season. You know, Thanksgiving, you know, kind of seems to get passed over by retailers for some reason. I think it might be because there's not much that they can sell to people for Thanksgiving. So really, you go from Halloween with all the candy and the costumes to Christmas with all the ornaments and lights and gifts. One of the things my family enjoys about this time of year is getting to watch all of the Hallmark movies. I'm sure you're familiar with these movies, and they are so similar to each other that they get to be pretty predictable. You know the story about a girl who is very successful, but has suffered a setback in her career or needs to help out in a family emergency, such as a farm that's being sold or a business that's not doing very well. Because of this situation, she comes home to a small town where she grew up and rekindles past love with her high school sweetheart, or meets a guy whose wife recently died, leaving him a single parent to a cute little girl. During the movie, there is some kind of wedding or festival that the whole town is preparing for, and by the end of the movie, they either get married or the couple is madly in love and you assume they will get married someday. Now, Evelyn, she especially loves the movies with the weddings in them. Despite the cheesy acting and the predictableness of the storylines, there is a certain comfort that we get from knowing that the movie will be safe for our whole family to watch. Now, I'm going to go out here on a limb and say that I believe that Satan's methods are as predictable as the next movie that Hallmark produces. He started with the angels in heaven. He sowed a spirit of dissatisfaction among many of the angels. To conceal his motives, he worked secretly and appeared to maintain a reverence for God. He began to plant doubts in their heads by saying that the angels should not be held to any laws, that they were incapable of sinning, and that he, Lucifer, should be deserve the equal treatment with the Son. While secretly seeking to promote rebellion and discontent, he caused it to appear that he was just trying to promote loyalty and preserve harmony and peace. His deceptions were so subtle that they were spreading fast in the heavenly courts. He took advantage of the trust that the angels had in him. In Revelation 12, verse 9, I will just quickly read it. It says, "So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old, called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him." So after Satan and his angels were thrown out of heaven, where do you think he went next? Yep, you got it. He came to earth. He wanted to spoil the perfect world that God had just created. God could have just destroyed Satan and his angels, but he didn't want people to serve him out of fear. He wanted the universe to see what Satan was really up to and let everyone choose for themselves. Now, God did not leave Adam and Eve without a warning, and he only allowed Satan to set up shop in one small part of the garden. I like to imagine the location of the tree of knowledge of good and evil was somewhere they probably passed by every day. That way, they had to choose daily to obey God's command to stay away. For a while, Adam and Eve obeyed God and they stayed away, but one day, while absorbed in what she was doing, Eve found herself alone. At first, she was afraid, but then she decided it would be okay, and she started walking around the garden alone. She suddenly found herself in front of the tree. Gazing up at the tree, she wondered why God did not want them to eat the fruit, because it looked so beautiful. As she was thinking this, the serpent started talking to her, flattering her with his words. She let her guard down when her response should have been to run away. Instead of running away, she stayed to listen to him. And even though she hadn't eaten the fruit yet, Satan had already had her in his trap when she started to talk to him. You see, Satan's deceptions are so great that if we give him an inch, he will take a mile. He is the great enemy and is not flesh and blood like us. We do not stand a chance on our own against him. Eve knew the truth, and sin had not yet entered her heart. God had warned her about an enemy and told her to stay away from the tree, but Satan still got her. Ephesians 6:12 says, "For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places." Now, there are two more Bible stories I want to highlight for you today, and I'm not going to go into too much detail on either one, but I do want to point out some similarities between the stories and how each person reacted differently when presented with temptation. The first story is about King David. At this point in his life, he had already survived King Saul's many attempts to kill him, and for many years had been enjoying the ease and luxury that came with his position as king. One day, he was on a rooftop overlooking the city when he saw a woman bathing. Now, any true gentleman would have looked away once he realized what he had seen. However, he lingered. He gazed. Just like Eve in the garden, he gave opportunity for temptation to take root in his heart. She was very beautiful, and despite the fact that he had several wives already, he could not control his desires for her. He could have saved himself and the nation of Israel much heartache if he would have looked away and gotten out of there as fast as possible. The second story is about Joseph. Joseph was in a completely different situation than David. Joseph was sold as a slave by his brothers and had worked his way up to the head of Potiphar's household. Joseph was a good-looking young man, and I'm sure that Potiphar's wife was also very beautiful. However, in this story, she was the one who was chasing after him. More than once, she had approached him, and he had told her that he could not go against God and Potiphar, his master. But one day, she caught him in the house alone with her. No one else was around, and she grabbed him. He knew he was in big trouble, and he got out of there as fast as he could. He left in such a hurry that she was left holding a piece of his clothes. Now, I believe this is exactly how we are to respond when presented with temptation or other deceptions from Satan that he may present to us. We are to run away. Do not linger. Do not gaze. Do not give him the opportunity to talk you into it. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 12 through 13. And I can take a little time if you guys want to turn to it. 1 Corinthians 10, chapter 10, verse 12 through 13. It says, "Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed, lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it." He says you need to escape. He didn't say you're going to stand there and watch and linger and think about it more and you'll survive the temptation. God will make an escape for us when we are tempted. There is a saying, the same song, different tune. Often songs that have the tune changed are classic songs or with familiar lyrics such as hymns or Christmas songs or maybe oldies, something you've heard before that is very popular, very familiar. Sometimes an artist will take it, try to put a new tune to it, you know, give it a fresh look. But even when you hear the song, it's a song you've heard before. It's a song that you know. So it doesn't matter if it has a different tune because it has the same lyrics. And so when you hear it, you can associate all of your thoughts with the original song, once you hear that new tune. So yes, time and time again, Satan uses the same approach when he comes to deceiving us. By mixing subtle deception with just the right amount of truth and pleasantness, he gets people to let their guard down. So really, his methods are the same song with a different tune. God knows that as sinners, we are weak and unable to withstand Satan's deceptions on our own. And that is why I believe the Bible refers to us so often as sheep. Yes, just like sheep, we get lost when we are not following our shepherd. Sheep don't intentionally get lost. All they have to do is to stop listening to their shepherd or get distracted by something they see. Isaiah 53 verse 6 says, "All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all." And I have to just stop and say that I cannot read that verse without thinking about Handel's Messiah. So it just illustrates my point about music. You have lyrics in the song, and you have this connection with them. John 10, verse 27 says, "My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me." We are all following someone. Who is it? Who are you following? Do you know the voice of the Good Shepherd? Right now, as never before, it is imperative that we know the voice of our shepherd. Keep your guard up. Keep a sharp eye. Do not let the enemy lead you astray. You have no excuses because there is nothing in this world that is worth letting go of the strength that is found in staying connected with the Lord. Satan knows that he has no chance against God. He also knows that the only way he can take us down is if he can separate us from the Lord. That is why he works so hard to keep us busy, to discourage us, to plant doubts in our heads. Then when we are vulnerable, Satan brings in the temptations. When it comes to temptation, there is no situation that is harmless. Stay connected with God through prayer and Bible study. Learn what your weaknesses are and avoid those situations. Get rest and eat right so you can think clearly. Things are only going to get worse in this world, and it is only going to get harder to make the time every day to spend with him. 2 Timothy 3, verse 13 through 15, I read the first part of this earlier already, but I'll go ahead and read it again. It says, "But evil men and imposters will grow worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. But you must continue in the things which you have learned and been assured of, knowing from whom you have learned them, and that from childhood you have known the Holy Scriptures, which you are able to make you wise for salvation through faith, which is in Christ Jesus." The Social Dilemma documentary presents real information to us that is mostly out of our control. We can't stop these companies from collecting our data. However, there are a few things we can do to limit the control they have over us. We can limit our screen time and limit what we share online. We can turn off our notifications, which is one of the biggest ways that they get used to keep us engaged. I think the main point of the film is to educate people so they are aware of what is going on, so they can make informed decisions and what they're willing to submit themselves to. No one expects you to stop using social media, as there is a lot of good that has been accomplished through these platforms. You know, there is another deception that is coming and has been predicted in the Bible. It will be Satan's grand finale. He has been planning this for a long time, and he wants to deceive as many people as possible. Now, I don't know when it will be or what it will exactly look like, but as I mentioned earlier, I do believe that his methods will be the same as before. He is going to employ every power he has to deceive us. His deceptions will be subtle, and they will be as close to the truth as possible while still being an out-and-out lie. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 9 through 12 says, "The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all unrighteousness, unrighteous deception among those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this reason, God will send them a strong delusion, that they should believe the lie, that they all might be condemned who did not believe the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness." The only way we will be able to avoid falling for this deception is if we have cultivated a love for the truth. Keep your eyes on God. Read his word daily. Pray without ceasing. Cling to him amidst the chaos. And above all, do not fear. Jesus has already defeated Satan at the cross. And there is absolutely no reason why we should fear Satan if we have our faith grounded in Jesus.
You have been listening to the broadcast from the Midland Seventh-day Adventist Church at 2420 East Ashman in Midland, Michigan. If you are in the area, we cordially invite you to visit our church Saturday mornings. If you are a distance away, we encourage you to continue visiting our website and weekly podcast at midlandsda.org.